Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, May 6th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 46 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it says Start Here. It'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. The tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've used to great effectiveness for the past 16-plus years to help me manage my emotions, improve my relationships, and turn any negative emotion I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us is gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. Just click on the PDF file, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and those audio files can serve as a tutorial for how to apply this tool in your life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and download a completely free and private app that has the Reality Management Worksheet in it, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because when they do, it usually leads to great improvement in their life quality and their managing their emotions and using their guidance system for their highest and best and the highest and best of everyone around them. And it often leads to comments or questions, and we would be happy to have those for when you call that number, 563-999-3581, and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code. We are working with the Course in Miracles lessons, the workbook lessons for the year, and today being the 126th day of the year, leaves us on lesson 126. And this is a baffler. If people are honest and they read the commentary on this lesson, they will probably have their head spinning, because it's one of those that's written with a lot of double negatives and written from a negative perspective and everything that's not. So the lesson for today reads simply, all that I give is given to myself. And one of the core thoughts is that we've been introduced to from another lesson is that giving and receiving are one and the same thing. They're part of the same flow of energy. And we aren't, you know, a very simple way, one of the deep spiritual truths is that there is no separation. We are all connected. All of creation is just a part of the flow of life and creation. And so when you read a lesson that says, all that I give is given to myself, it goes against what we're taught in this culture because we see ourselves as separate from everyone. And if we give something to somebody, we've lost that thing. And we're trained to think of life as a zero-sum game. The commentary in the first paragraph or two read, today's idea is completely alien to the ego and the thinking of the world. And it is crucial to the thought reversal that this course will bring about. If you believed this statement that all I give is given to myself, there would be no problem in complete forgiveness. There would be no problem in certainty of goal. There would be no problem in the surety of your direction. You would understand the means by which salvation comes to you, and you would do it now. Let's consider what you do believe. It seems to you that other people are apart from you. It seems to you that other people are able to behave in ways which have no bearing on your thoughts, nor your thoughts and your behaviors have any bearing on theirs. Therefore, it seems to you that your attitudes have no effect on them, and that their appeals for help are not in any way related to your own appeals for help. You further think that you can make an error without affecting your perception of yourself, while you can judge their sin, the error in others, and yet remain apart from the condemnation, and you can remain at peace. None of that is true. So there are a whole bunch of paragraphs that just keep spinning back and forth until paragraph 8 in the commentary says, today we try to understand the truth that giver and receiver are the same. There is no separation. You will need help to make this meaningful because it is so alien to the thoughts that you were trained in your culture and your family. But the help you need is here. Give creation your faith today. Ask creation that it share your practicing in truth today. And if you only catch a tiny glimpse of the release that lies in the idea we practice for today, just a tiny glimpse of it will mean this is a day of glory for the world. What's that tiny glimpse? To recognize you are not separate. And anyone that you judge, you're judging yourself. Anyone that you offer forgiveness to, you offer it to yourself as equal, as part of a system. So as often as you can, remind yourself you have a goal today, an aim which makes this day of special value to yourself and all your brothers and sisters. Help your mind remember this goal. Tell yourself, all that I give is given to myself. The help I need to learn this is with me now, and I trust that help. I trust creation. Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 126, is titled Repairing the Glitch. She quotes someone as saying, it takes a special kind of mind to break away from the norm, to know or to believe that what everybody accepts is not right. Lesson 126, Pam writes, all that I give is given to myself. This lesson teaches me that the need to maximize self-interest is nothing but a long-standing glitch. It calls out the myth of separation, proves that everything I give boomerangs right back to me. It may seem like I'm separate from you. It may seem that my attitudes and beliefs have no bearing on your behavior, that my thoughts have no effect on you. But that's old school conditioning. Today, I bravely leave that washed out old paradigm in the dust. Instead, I send a message of trust out into the world. No matter how it appears, I will trust that you're not really a jerk. I will trust that, like me, you care about life and want only to be courageous, generous, and kind. I divest myself of the you versus me paradigm. I recognize it's not what makes me or anybody else happy. As I follow my heart, I will freely offer my gifts and take interest in others' well-being as I enter a different realm. I find a world restored to unity. All that I give is given to myself. Learning to live in the observation of connectedness. Simplify it. If you're like me, it's important to simplify even the commentary on today's lesson. It's a head spinner of double speak and talking about what isn't. But if you get to paragraph 8, it comes right to the point. We try to understand the great truth that the giver and receiver are the same. And that's the opposite of what we've been taught in our family and cultural conditioning. And so it's going to take some work to dismantle that old false conditioning and to move into a state that allows me to observe very directly the truth that is true always, which is I remain as I was created to be. Everyone of my brothers and sisters remains as they were created to be, and all of creation is connected. It's a flow of energy. The appearance of separation is an illusion. It's a dream. It's a curse. So what I wish to have in my life today, I must first give. And as I give, I receive. It's all a flow. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We have 46 minutes left. Time for questions, comments, answers, soliloquies. We have a support group coming up tonight, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. The information about how to join hopefully is still available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. There have been some website glitches recently, so I should check that as I mention it. And there's a separate information page for Tuesday versus Thursday, so please use the Thursday online support group information link and either join us yourself or apparently I need to upgrade the website because it says this will be running through February 18th of 2021, and we're long past that. But that link should still work, and if you're not inclined to join us because of your schedule or your personal needs, please feel free to pass that information along to someone who might find it useful. And it's absolutely free to join. We continue to remove all the barriers that we know how to remove and we're capable of removing to get these tools into the hands of every mind, heart, and being on the planet, whether they have financial resources to pay for them or not. We do have the option to donate for anybody who thinks it's of value enough and they have financial resources, but you can join us for free. MindShiftersAcademy.org is the website. Thursday Online Support Group is the link to click on. So, how can we support you today? What's a comment? What's a question? What's a topic you'd like to have us explore? My mind is buzzing with all kinds of options because I've been in a number of different sessions already today, and before I started sessions, I was listening to the Tao Made Easy. Welcome, Susan. How are you today?
Well, I could be better. I'm embarrassed to say that I just woke up. I went and lay down, put my hand in the abacus, dialed your number, and fell asleep, and just woke up. And I do have some questions, but I missed your entire, I heard you say, this is a tough one. And it is a tough one, that lesson. I'll have to go back and listen to the rerun
of
your comments.
Well, basically, just read, if you're in that lesson, my advice is just read the first paragraph of commentary and maybe the second, and then the eighth paragraph of commentary, and then the last one. That's
okay.
All of the other stuff is just talking about what isn't in that convoluted double negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And but the essence of it is to just recognize that, you know, forgiveness is no good if I think I'm separate from someone else. If I think I'm better than or worse than someone else, my forgiveness is a distortion. It's a product of the distortion of the illusion, and it is not based in truth, and it doesn't benefit anybody. It's adding more illusion to the illusion.
Right. I read that.
So
very
giving and receiving. Go ahead.
Sorry. I usually read this lesson during a time of wakefulness in the middle of the night, and that's one reason I'm calling. And I know I've asked you questions about this before. I wake up anywhere from 11:30 to 12:30 and then stay awake maybe the rest of the night or maybe 2 or 3 hours unless I take a little bit of Xanax, which I don't want to be taking because I would like to find the reason for this and cure it. And also, I've been having worse and worse tinnitus and anxiety, and I'm just all out of kilter right now. And I'm wondering if part of it is because of the work I've been doing recently. I'm hoping this is a healing crisis, but I just feel incredibly discombobulated and disoriented. And it's funny, I come online to get some support and fall asleep, which is a kind of support. But, I mean, should I listen to reruns in the middle of the night? Maybe I should fall asleep listening to Tim Hayes, although that isn't really the way I feel about the program at all. But anyway, I'll stop there and see if you have a thought, and then I'll keep going if you don't.
Well, my question is, when you say that you wake up at 11:30 or 12:30 and then stay awake, what time do you go to bed if you're waking up at 11:30?
Well, 9:30, 10. I mean, I'll go
right
to sleep.
You're waking up after 2 or 2.5 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And then you're saying that sometimes that's all the sleep you get all night.
I get more than that. Patches, mainly I get from 4 to, if it's a good night, it's 6 hours. To my mind and to my thinking, that's not enough. On the days when I get very, very little, I don't feel very well the next day. I might have stomach aches or a headache, or I'm a little out of kilter. And yet I took the personal code evaluation again, and basically my habits and beliefs are aligned in such a way that Michael was praising me to the skies for all the jumps I had made in all everywhere. And I feel as if, well, I'm not sure that that's the truth. I answered them truthfully from my healthy self and my healthy experience. But then I basically, after I took that test and got that great score, I went into a tailspin of sleeplessness and worsened tinnitus and anxiety and so on and so on and so on. So I'm basically here to have you comment, sort out whatever ideas pop to mind. I'd love to hear them.
Well, the idea that comes to mind most prominently is the allowance and surrender idea.
Okay.
And we've talked about this before. If I go to bed at night and I think this has to happen, I have to get 6, 7, 8, 9 hours of sleep. I have to have uninterrupted sleep with only maybe once getting up and going to the bathroom. If I have that thought, and mm-hmm. then I think I better get to sleep right now,
okay.
and I'm lying there awake with my thoughts racing and I'm beating myself up because I'm not asleep yet, and that's a recipe
right.
for misery.
Yes,
it's a recipe
that
many people know. They know it very well, and they practice it on a regular basis. And they don't
yeah.
understand how that yields the results that they get, which are so consistent.
Mm-hmm.
But you
yeah.
can't make yourself go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I am in this situation and I find my mind racing and I find that the things that I've been trying to do to help myself relax don't work, then I should try something else. And I should allow and surrender to the fact that, well, my mind's busy and I'm wide awake right now. And if I'm in that cycle for a long enough period of time and it's unproductive enough, then I'll seek out some professionals and some people that specialize in sleep and the natural remedies for sleep or the holistic remedies for sleep and see what I can do. But each night, individually, when sleep is not coming to me, I'm going to be gentle with myself and allow for the waking time to do something constructive or relaxing. If I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I can go listen to some beautiful music without, you know, waking others in my living situation, or if I have the ability to get up and journal or, you know, do a piece of work, and until such time as my body says, okay, you're tired, and we'll go back to sleep, then I do that. But I do it from a space of allowance and being gentle with myself, because the other part doesn't work. The beating yourself up, you know what it leads to. You've done it enough times. You're quite familiar with that pattern.
Yes, yes. Well, you said holistic and natural remedies. That's the way I want to go and have gone. I may have a lot of subliminal beliefs that tell me that those don't work. But in any case, they haven't worked. And so I've gone to Xanax, which works. It buys me a couple of hours of sleep. Sometimes I wake up right after it has kicked in. But those 2 hours are what makes the difference. I want to stop doing that, but I have this belief that those drugs work, and Tim Bingham encourages me to get another type of sleeping pill, you know, a prescription of some kind. And maybe that's going to be necessary, and maybe it's not a bad thing, but I often don't feel very well after having taken the Xanax, so I'm confused. And, you know.
I know. I get it. I get it from a lot of people. and they give basically the same story you do about it. It's so miserable, and so the solution and the solution really helps, but then I feel lousy after I take the solution. And
yeah.
So whether it's just because I have a philosophical bias against the medication, or I'm actually feeling groggy and like I'm in a fog the next day. There are all kinds of ways in which people rebel against taking certain remedies, and then they've got these, Michael would call them, you know, conflicting goals about it. I want sleep, mm-hmm. and so I think the only way I can get sleep is to take the Xanax. I hate the Xanax. I don't want to be on a prescription, so I have these conflicting goals. Well, what do we know about the way the mind functions? What do we know about having mm-hmm. holding conflicting goals in the human mind? It creates disruption. It creates pain. It creates discomfort or dis-ease. And that's just the way life is. If I hold conflicting goals and I keep trying to give my mind energy to both of them, I'm going to create the conflict of the conflicting goals. Mm-hmm. I'm going to create the dis-ease and the pain. I did an interview with Dr. Nishi Bhopal, who is a specialist in sleep. She has a specialty about sleep disorders, and she talks about the circadian rhythms and the way she coaches people. But she takes a whole person approach to coaching people who have sleep problems. It's not just, here, find this substance to infuse in your tea, and then, you know, mm-hmm. it's the whole person type coaching. And it's not just that you look at your sleep hygiene, which includes the physical environment that you're going to be trying to sleep in, the light, the noise, the comfort, the mindset that you take into it. That's sleep hygiene stuff. Well, that's important, but that's not all she does when she's coaching somebody who's struggling with sleep problems.
Mm.
And that interview is available absolutely free at journeysdream.org/podcast. That's Dr. Nishi Bhopal. And she's out on the West Coast.
Good. Is this a new one you've done, Dr. Tim?
Yes. Yeah.
Why?
I'm trying to pull it up right now. Susan, when you asked me that, my head is spinning trying to figure out, when did that get published? And that was published on the 4th.
Oh, okay.
So, yes,
good.
It's just this week.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Thanks.
And there may or may not be a solution there for you, because you're a different person. You've got your unique issues to sort through. But there might be some leads that you might look into if you listen to that, or you might want to call her to get a consult and find out, you know, here's somebody that looks at a holistic approach to treating sleep problems and has a passion for that.
Yeah. Well, there are so many layers to this. I realize in asking you, I'm asking you to fix me. I'm asking you to give me permission to take Xanax or not. All kinds of crap is popping up. So,
let me just say then officially for the record that I would like to give you exactly what you want. So here's my official permission for you to either take Xanax or not. I'm crossing.
Okay.
I'm making the sign of the cross. I'm imagining tapping you on one shoulder and the other as you kneel in front of me. You have my official permission to either take Xanax or not.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Until I grow up sufficiently, that's very helpful. Okay.
Well, you know, the kind of thing that I come back to with this over and over again when I'm working with people, whether it's a family, a friend, or somebody in my practice, I just keep coming back to, let's be results-oriented. Let's give ourselves
mm-hmm.
permission to do what works for us.
Yeah.
And understand that everything that I choose to do in this kind of a situation has costs and benefits. It has trade-offs.
Right,
and if I'm willing to pay the trade-offs, then and the benefits seem worth it to me, then give myself permission to be gentle with myself and pursue what works for me. It doesn't matter how many other people like it or say it's good. Or, you know, we had a
right.
We had a support group last Thursday night where that was one of the themes. I think we've mentioned this before. If you're doing something because your guru or your mentor or your teacher says you should, but you're conflicted about it internally, it's a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, the thing to do is check in for yourself, with yourself, your higher wisdom. Find something mm-hmm. that you're comfortable with and pursue it regardless of who thinks it's right.
And regardless of what you read on the internet. Yeah. Years ago, Tim and I worked at the Connecticut Hospice. I've mentioned this before, I think. And one of the things that patients would say, here are these patients who are on their deathbeds. They have under 6 months at the most to live, or they don't even get to stay there. And they're saying, will I get addicted to it? And, you know, their concerns are very real, but they've got a double mind. They know they're heading out, but they're planning on a long life in which addiction would be a nuisance and a problem. And so here I am reading, you know, possible side effects of taking Xanax, and one is tinnitus and another one is early Alzheimer's or Alzheimer's, dementia. And I'm thinking, oh, great. Well, here I am. I'm 77. Should I just cash in and, you know, do the damage and have a good life for a shorter time? And, oh, gosh, I get so mixed up. Yeah.
Yep, I understand. And, again, that, you know, another way to talk about that very thing is what Michael Rice calls the competing goals, conflicting goals. I'm holding both of them. And, you know, the kind of thing you're talking about, we experienced it with my grandmother. She was 89 years old, and she got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and she decided that she didn't want, you know, surgery and chemo and all that stuff at 89. And so, honor her decision. And then she would walk around the house, and she'd be wincing in pain, and we'd say, Graham, what's the matter? Oh, I just got this. It feels like there's somebody with a wire tightening it around my midsection, and it's cutting into me and hurting it. Well, Graham, take a pain pill. Oh, I don't want to get addicted.
Well, you know, and I've got an age cut off, and it's approaching. So I'm thinking if I were 80, I'd take the pill. But I'm not quite 80 yet. I've set up all this stuff. You're helping me a lot just letting this be talked through, and I hope it's useful on the radio show. Man, yeah.
Well, if it's useful to you, that's all we're concerned with right now.
Okay, good.
You know, I can't tell you. I can't tell you what a trap it is for me to talk to my guru, my spiritual teacher, my priest, about what's good mm-hmm. for the world when I'm a wreck. And that goes right to the heart of today's Course in Miracles lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're worried about the impact on others, and you're a wreck. You can't help somebody else if you're a wreck.
Right. Okay, well.
So if you give to yourself this gentleness, if you give to yourself the willingness to do what works to you without judging, then you've given that gift to everyone else, because giving and receiving are the same. The giver and the receiver are the same. There is no separation. Mm-hmm. If mm-hmm. you judge someone else as being wrong because they use an opiate or a benzodiazepine as a sleep aid or as a painkiller, then you've judged yourself as being wrong. There's no separation.
Quick, tell me more about those.
Quick, tell you more about what?
Benzodiazepine and opiates. They sound kind of...
Well, the benzodiazepines are the kinds of things you're taking. That's your Xanax. That's, you know, those tranquilizers.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And the opiates?
And the opiates are the painkillers, the Oxycontins, the Oxycodones, the Vicodins, things like that that everybody's
getting addicted
on and because they've had a back surgery or a knee problem. But, you know, they're the painkillers that for some people, they're a great way to numb out. Some people take it with a little bit of alcohol. Some people just keep popping the pills and they stay numb to their emotions and their physical pain. But it's a life-threatening addiction process with those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
the point of my statement wasn't about the drugs. The point of my statement was about judging someone who chooses to use them. And if I judge somebody else, I'm judging myself.
Got it.
And if I judge myself as being bad or wrong or stupid, I'm judging everyone else. We're all the same. There's no separation. This is about what's the mind energy I'm going to put out into the world. Am I going to put out the energy of recognition that we all remain the way we were created to be, that everyone I see is a miracle of light and life, that there is no such thing as an idiot, there are only beings of brilliance and light. And some of those people,
like
me included, are acting like we're a being of brilliance and light, and some of us have either yet to discover or we've temporarily forgotten that we are a being of brilliance and light.
Yeah.
But there is no such thing as somebody who is unworthy, somebody who is a horrible person. There are behaviors that are hurtful to self and others.
Mm.
But that's what today's lesson is about, is the recognition that the giver and the receiver are the same. The judger and the judged are the same. So we had somebody else raise a hand. Are you up for another set of input?
Yes, sure.
Area code 828, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Area code...
It's 808.
Hello,
I'm sorry. Is this? I misspoke. Is this Roma?
Yeah, it is. But you know what? It's, I didn't press the button. Anyway.
Well, so the button pressed.
Oh, good morning.
You have a comment, or do you want me to put you back on mute?
Oh, I'll just say hi, Susan.
Hi, Roma.
Okay. I love you. Thank you, Dr.
Oh,
Kim.
Thank you, Roma.
Okay. This was an accident of fate here. Anyway.
All right. Here. Blessings. So, Susan, the point of our lesson today and of this conversation is judgment is error. Judgment is the opposite love.
Right. And I hadn't seen my panic over the sleep as a judgment. I mean, that seems pretty rudimentary, but I hadn't. So that's very helpful right there. And then another thing I say to myself is, you know, I have to teach two or three times a week and run a support group. That's not much. And I'm somehow always up for them. But then I think of you and Michael, and I think, if I had to do a radio show 5 days a week feeling like this, I don't know. I don't know how they do it. And so I'm just giving you a backhanded compliment.
But there are people that have said this in various ways. I don't know whether it was Walt Whitman or was somebody today on the radio, somebody said, Dow Made Easy in that book, and I was listening to it, another person said, comparison is the death of joy. And so Guy Finley says, the vast majority of your negative emotional states are the bitter fruit of a comparative life.
Okay.
So as soon as start comparing yourself to Michael or you compare yourself to me and say, oh my gosh, if I had to do that, I couldn't do that. Well, you're missing the boat completely. You're in judgment of yourself and others. And I got news for you. if somebody told me that I had to produce the kind of mind-bogglingly good art that you produce when you start cutting on paper, I would feel suicidal.
Oh, Dr. Tim, don't do that.
I'm telling you. I mean, everything is relative, right? Mm. If what you're doing is playing to your strengths, is following the Joseph Campbell adage to, you know, follow your bliss or find your bliss and pursue it, then you'll have the energy for it. But if you're doing something that you think you should, whether it's getting a certain amount of sleep or being able to run more support groups or whatever you think you should, and it's exhausting thinking about it, and then you compare yourself to somebody else who does that with ease, that's an error in your thought. And that error in your thought is creating the misery that you're experiencing. Nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I get it again. Thanks. That's very helpful. I'm doing big inhales and exhales. Those are a great relief to
because,
hear again.
Because the fact of the matter is you're an artist of considerable measure. And if you're there doodling with paper, how exhausting is that?
Right. It isn't at all.
It just happens for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the problem with comparing ourselves to others. That's like, you know, the fish and that's the story of the animals lined up at, you know, in the forest and they're there to be judged and they want to be fair, so everybody has to pass the same test, climb that tree. Right? Well, the turtle and the fish and several other animals, the rabbit, they're not going to do so well, but that doesn't mean it's a bad rabbit or a bad turtle or a bad fish. It's a problem
yeah.
It's a problem with comparative thinking.
Mm.
It's a problem with judgment rather than allowance and surrender and acceptance.
Mm. Very good. Thanks.
And try to remember that for every time you compare yourself to somebody else and either they come up short or you come up short. It's an error to be in the business of comparison to begin with. Guy Finley tells the story of the person that he's the roving reporter, and he heard a story of a town where they had more missing persons than any other town in the U.S. So the roving reporter went out there to figure out what the heck's going on. And when he got there, it wasn't long before he saw somebody sitting on a park bench, and then all of a sudden a little tiny tailor, you know, with tape measures and pins and scissors, showed up on the person's shoulder. And the person looked over and kind of smiled at the tailor. But then all of a sudden there were two, and then four, and then six, and they started, you know, doubling exponentially like this, and pretty soon the tailors were like sticking the person with pins, and the person squirming and screaming in pain, and then the person just disappears into the ground.
Whoa!
And the reporter was like, "Oh my God, I've never seen anything like it." And then, of course, over the week, while the reporter was there, I saw this happen more and more and more, and was trying to figure out, you know, a plan. How can I save these people? When should I intervene? What, you know, I don't want to get, you know, overwhelmed by tailors, et cetera. So finally, it happened that he saw a woman, and this process started, and he was close enough when it started that he was moving towards her to try and intervene, and all of a sudden he saw her turn and say something to the tailors, and instantly all the tailors just disappeared in a little puff of smoke. And she went on with her day, and he ran after her and said, "Wait a minute, this is a miracle. How'd this happen? I've been here for a week watching people get consumed by these tiny tailors, and you've got to tell me, what's the secret? What did you do?" And she said, "Oh, nothing, really." He said, "Oh, come on." She said, "Well, I just said to them, I've decided not to measure myself anymore. I don't need you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, what a great story.
And Guy Finley talks about how, think about how absurd this is, that we measure ourselves. We're the ones doing the measuring, and then we come up short. How crazy is that? I've turned on the microphone for Mary. Is this Mary?
It is. And since you're telling one of my very favorite stories, I had to jump in. That story did a lot for me at the time. It was awesome. But I just wanted to jump in on this, on what Susan's talking about. Sometimes I think there's a difference between comparison and, I don't know, learning or teaching. And that, like, I can remember looking at you and saying, I don't know how you get so much done in a day. How do you know? And I'm with the comparison. But then I realized, well, okay, I'm not you, and I know you're human, and, you know, and I look up to you in some ways for the teaching aspect. But if I had not done that, I would not know the techniques that you use, and I wouldn't be able to apply them to myself and improve myself in whatever way that I have. So in some ways, I think, like, it may start as comparison, but it can be a really good teaching tool in some ways. You know, I think I've stretched myself, done a better job because of it.
Okay, and I would have to agree with that because it's been your observation. I would offer for your consideration that what's happening there is more discernment than judgment. So, you know, the comparison that leads me to judge them as better or me as worse or vice versa, that's where the dis-ease comes in. Whereas if I just use discernment and say, wow, this person approaches things differently and they seem to get better results than I have. Maybe if I tried what they're doing, and so I'm not beating myself up because I'm not doing it as well as them. I'm just noticing that there might be a different way, and then I'm trying, you know, applying a different technique and seeing how it works. So it's about, I would say there, the difference between discerning and judging.
Okay, I get that. I just think that at certain points, I'm not up to that. I have to start. Sometimes I start from the judgment, I guess, and then realize what I'm doing and then move it over. I don't know. Okay.
But we all do, because we're basically raised in the culture and the families that do nonstop judging.
Oh, yeah.
And evaluating, and then punishing, and or rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
So you come by it quite naturally. I mean, and that's what today's Course in Miracles workbook lesson is all about. Saying, listen, we've all been trained to think we're separate from others, and that what they think and do has no impact on us, or what they think and do is separately causing us. And that our judgment of them doesn't hurt us, et cetera. So it's going to take a while to undo that level of conditioning, the judgment level of conditioning, and step into the observant level of discernment, to use slightly different words than today's lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, the other thing I was just going to mention is when Susan was talking about sleep, I've certainly been there, and I was a ball of anxiety for a long time, years on antidepressants. But I used to take something called trazodone, which I guess is an old style antidepressant. That you'll sleep with that. In fact, I've read that sometimes that's all they give it to people for, and I don't know how horrible that is for you. I'm not taking it anymore. I've gotten off all medications, but that was the last one I got rid of. And getting rid of a lot more anxiety helped a lot, but that was a gateway into my, you know, being able to get off all medication and feel better. Is that not one of them that's like Xanax, right? It's just an antidepressant, correct?
No, it's an antidepressant. It has its own functioning. And when they give it to people as an antidepressant, they give it 4 to 6 to 8 times as much as when they give it to people just as a sleep aid.
Right. Yes. Yes, I do remember that.
And it's really more useful to say, if your body chemistry is like Mary's, you'll really sleep with that one.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Because some people take that and they don't sleep still.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
Whew. Yeah, because it's a chemical interaction thing. I mean, I've got at least 2 people in my caseload right now who have tried that as one of the things that they've been, you know, suggested to have as this cocktail of drugs, and they still aren't sleeping consistently well. So, you know, it's more accurate to say that if your body chemistry is like Mary's and they give you trazodone, you'll sleep really well.
Well, true.
At least, you know, however. You'll sleep intensely or whatever. But there are always trade-offs, especially the longer you're on those things. You know, if you want to find out more about that, you can read Robert Whitaker's book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, where he cites all the research about how the longer people are on those psychotropic meds, the more they develop problems that are very similar to what they were taking the meds to get rid of in the first place.
Wow.
And I have not read the warning label for a single sleep aid that doesn't say right in it that it's for temporary use only, short-term use only, and one of the side effects of long-term use is insomnia.
Oh, my God.
every sleep aid that I've ever been introduced to, if you read the warning labels, it says right in there, short-term use only, long-term use may cause insomnia.
Oh, boy. Now, I guess that's as bad as the thing Michael talked about toothpaste and how it says, if swallowed, go to emergency room.
That's true.
Yikes. Okay, well, that was my input for now. But, yeah, one of my favorite Sky Family stories is so awesome, the Tiny Taylors. Just love it.
All right. Well, thank you for the call.
Thanks.
So, Susan, where are you now?
Yeah.
What questions or comments would you have for us?
Well, while I was asleep, I imagine you read Pam Grout, her lesson 126, right?
Yes, I did.
I loved it when she said, no matter how it appears, I will trust that you're not an a-hole. I totally love that.
No, my copy says jerk.
It does?
No. But that's what I read.
Oh, you mean to say your audio version or whatever it is, your online version has it as a jerk?
No, I'm saying that I chose not to read the word a-hole.
Okay.
I just said... You know, a jerk. I did some on-the-fly editing.
I see. Well, the thing I love about that is she goes one level deeper in admitting that this is how we first perceive someone. It's an error, but she's saying, okay, on that level I can say, I'm going to trust that you're not what I think I see you as being. And I just thought it was very friendly. And she's been a wonderful help, I think, all the way through for the using the workbook. She adds a kind of lightness and informality to it all. It's interesting that last night we had what was supposed to be our final retreat intensive night, but Michael has generously added 2 more because we haven't quite finished a couple of things. But one of the discussions was about the language, the double negatives and so forth in A Course in Miracles. And it was just a really good discussion and went the full spectrum. One of us said, and I hope I got this right, he said it twice and I still wasn't sure what this man said. But he said, this is the word of Jesus. This is Jesus talking. I'm not going to question this stuff. And one woman was saying, I rewrite things into the positive, which I know Michael does too. And I've always, not always, but recently in the last couple of years, right above in the workbook, I've written the putting it in the positive as an easier way to remember it and a lighter way to put it. So it was just a really good discussion about that. But Pam Grout adds another dimension altogether in her kind of irreverence. And yet I really think she's right on.
Well, it's a real trap to think I'm not going to change this because so-and-so said it, whether it's Jesus or the priest or Dr. Rice, or it's just a trap because wisdom can't be possessed. It can only be accessed, right? So this isn't the wisdom of Jesus. This isn't the wisdom of Dr. Michael Rice. This isn't the wisdom of anybody else. This is just, if there's wisdom in something, it's because it's a recognition of what actually is and an integrated application of the truth of what is in the moment. That's the only thing that is wisdom.
Yeah.
It's not something that you can write down and possess. It's not something that when you come up with it and you say it, it's yours. Wisdom cannot be possessed. It can only be accessed. And anyone can access wisdom. Everyone has an internal guide or the mechanism to tap into the internal guide, and that's what all of these tools are about, to help each and every one of us remove any blockages to our conscious awareness of that internal wisdom source within every one of us. So, you know, to say, oh, I'm not going to change it, it's got to be just the way it was written, is kind of a silliness, because it isn't Jesus' words in A Course in Miracles. It's some thoughts that the consciousness that was identified as Yeshua was coming through a woman and a man who were steeped in the competitive world of academia back in the 1960s in America, in the English language. It's got all kinds of filters and distortions to it.
Right.
So,
right.
You know,
I agree.
It's the essence of the message and how it translates into real life that's important. It's not the words that are written on the paper that are important. The word is not the thing. All these great spiritual traditions tell us the word is not the thing.
Yeah.
So I appreciate, as always, your comments and questions. Thank you for joining us today. I will mute you and do the transition to our second hour. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. And thank you, everybody, for being patient with all the pre-recordings. Yesterday, I did the first hour of a tape called Healing Our Planet. Today, I'm actually going to do another one that's on supporting another person. I'll play the last 25 minutes tomorrow of the Healing Your Planet, and then I'll be live on the show tomorrow afternoon. Michael's getting some major dental work done, and I have an electrician here at the house where we have a broken line, so I can't do the show today live. But thank you all for your patience and for being with us. Hold the space for Michael as he's having this work done, and we appreciate you. So welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, May the 6th, 2021, and I will begin this recording, and then, like I said, I'll complete the recording from yesterday tomorrow. It's about 25 minutes left of that one, and then I'll be live for the rest of the show tomorrow. And thank you again for your patience. This one is about supporting another person. It's a conversation that I actually had with Dr. Tim and some other people about, you know, trying to rescue another person and keep them above water, and yet they're not willing to do the work after in between sessions or whatever. So enjoy this replay. It's from July the 8th, 2019.
There's actually a young lady that I have been working with, and it has given me opportunities to look at a part of me that perhaps hasn't been totally healed, but she is in a relationship that's so abusive. And this morning I actually, in a way, got a little tough with her and asked her how many times she was going to tell me her story before she was willing to do something and put some action, that every time she told her story that she was adding energy to the situation, and that just telling the story over and over again to 4, 5, 6 different people wasn't making a change, that she needed to put some action into it, to change her mind, or if she wasn't going to do anything about it, to accept that that's the way it was and put her mind and energy somewhere else instead of just on talking about it. But it's like she doesn't want to leave him. She doesn't want him to leave, and yet she doesn't know how to stay. I think the biggest thing is she's probably afraid of being alone because she's never been alone. And but she has finally started doing some worksheets around her issues because, you know, I told her you can't change him. All you can do is change you. And if it's not healthy for you physically or whatever, mentally, then put yourself in a different space. But she's not doing that either. And she just continued to, I mean, like I have spent hours with her, and if she wasn't a friend, I'd send her a bill. But I'm not real sure where else to go with her other than just continue encouraging her to do her work around it. Do you have any input on that?
Well, this reminds me of a time when Julie Haverstick called the show a couple of years ago, I think. And she asked Michelle and I for input because she was gaining, she was building frustration in her working with people who weren't doing any work between their sessions, their phone calls. They weren't doing the worksheets or they weren't doing the mind shifter. And so she asked for Michelle and I to give input on, you know, how do you handle that kind of situation? And it's a little bit different when you say it's a friend rather than a client or a patient. Because for, as a, you know, in dealing with a friend, you might choose to stay in the process longer, listen to the stories longer. But it still pertains to the same process, which is, you know, primarily, I'll answer it, if you're thinking of yourself as a counselor in any way, and you have somebody who is just stuck repeating their story and not making any of the changes that you might recommend to improve the quality of their situation or their life. And what I talked about in that show was that it doesn't happen very often, but I do at times fire patients. And I don't fire them to be tough love. I don't fire them to be mean. I don't fire them out of frustration on my part. I fire them because I don't want to remain part of the facade of the illusion. I don't want to contribute to their hallucination that they're in therapy, and that because they're in therapy, there's a chance for things to get better when they're not doing any of the work that would actually make things better. Because if I keep seeing them when I know they're not doing anything between sessions, – what I know is they're not going to get better. There's no magic in just hearing my voice say the same kinds of things over and over and over again. The magic, if you will, is the power within them to choose differently. And if they continue to choose the same thing over and over again, that's okay, but that's their choice. And I don't want to participate in the illusion that, well, they're in therapy. Because therapy is the actual process of applying tools to discover what I don't yet know about myself and then change my ways of thinking and relating to my life. That's what therapy is. Therapy isn't just talking about my problems to me. Therapy is actually learning what I can do differently and doing it. Now, if you extend that to a friend, then there are also times when with friends I have said things like, you know, I care about you. I see you as intelligent. I have the firm belief that you can make better choices. And it's really uncomfortable for me to hear you say the same thing over and over without making any changes. So I'm just going to say that if that's what you want to do, I don't want to participate in that. If you want to call me and tell me how things are going better in your life and how you appreciate this and that and give me an update about the good things, I'm here for that. But if you're going to keep doing the same things, it's just too painful for me to listen to you stay stuck and not change anything. So I'm going to take a break from that. You can reach out, you can reconnect, you know, when something changes, or I will, you know, check in a while to see, because I care about you and I hope that you find a solution. But I've exhausted what I can do as a friend, and it's very uncomfortable for me to know that there's the potential for you to do so much better and different and that you're choosing this.
That's a good way of putting it. I actually, the last thing that I talked to her this morning, she was texting me. Like, she's started texting every morning, like at 7:30, 8 o'clock, and would go all day long except when I say, I got to go. And then sometimes she's texting 11, 12 o'clock at night, and it's like it's the same story. So I actually told her this morning, I said, okay, so what's your payoff for this? I said, you just keep telling your story to all these people, you keep adding energy to it. She's staying weepy, cryy, sad all the time, and that's not her. I have seen her before as a strong, independent woman, and it's like, you know, I'd say he's not your happiness, just like he's not your sadness. And I've gone through all of that. I've explained the worksheets. I've walked her through several worksheets, and she just determined to stay in it. And so it's like, okay, so what payoff are you getting for this? And she hasn't emailed me or texted me again after I asked her that. So just asking that one question may have stopped it, but I hope that she will actually consider it instead of just being satisfied to be pitiful, because that's not who she is. And,
well, the other thing that I would say when she told me that, you know, this person is calling at these different hours, is I would say that's not a very good practice for you.
I agree.
To just allow indiscriminate use of your time. So I would encourage you to set, you know, to be more rigorous with your awareness of where you're spending your energy.
Right.
And make statements to that person that indicate that you value yourself as much as you value being a friend to her. And that, you know, feel free to call after this time and before this time. Otherwise, You know, otherwise, what you're demonstrating to her is the opposite of what you're asking her to do. Right? You want her to be responsible for herself, to set better limits in relationship, to, you know, choose more wisely, and yet you let her interfere with your schedule and your life early mornings and late nights in a way that's not respectful of you and your time. So your words are screaming at her, you know, in the outward volume, but your actions are speaking far more loudly, saying, listen, I don't really value myself. I'm going to let you call me late night, early morning, even though you're not making progress, even though you don't seem to value the message in my words, even though it's not good for me and my family relationships and my energy. If somebody's calling you that early and that late at night and just pouring on all of this negativity that you just mentioned, where is the time for you to do your meditation, your prayer, your own worksheets, enjoyment of that little granddaughter that you're with? Do you follow me?
Good point. Yep. Yep, I got it. And I hadn't thought of it that way, but you are absolutely right.
Well, there's so many of us that get into the helping professions that lose sight of that. We lose sight of the fact that our actions speak far more loudly than our words. I remember being in graduate school, and it was one of the things that just really blew up in my face, basically, was that they were telling us that we had to take 16 hours of graduate school credits to be full-time. And because my family wasn't wealthy and I was doing this all on my own, I had to work 2 and 3 and 4 jobs at a time to maintain that schedule. And then after the first year of doing that for 3 trimesters, then in the second year, I started to get burned out. And in the second year, they wanted me to work in a practicum, where I'm actually doing therapy and getting supervised. Well, what's the point of therapy? Well, my point of therapy is I'm going to teach people how to live a healthy, balanced life, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Meanwhile, what I'm doing is completely inhuman, trying to function on 4 and 5 hours of sleep, studying for classes, maintaining 3 part-time jobs, doing therapy for, you know, X number of hours a week. And the ridiculousness of that hit home. And after the first trimester, I stopped and I said, this is nuts. This is a level of insanity that I refuse to participate in. And I said, I'm going to cut back and go part-time. And they said, oh, no, you can't do that. And I said, well, then I guess I can't be in this program. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, this is not safe. This isn't sane. This is me living an inhuman life, pretending that I can coach people on how to live a healthier, happier, healthy, balanced life. There's an insanity there that I don't want to participate in. Well, eventually they gave in and said, well, you can go part-time. Because I said, you either accept me as a part-time student or you lose me as a student, period. It's all through this whole process of medical professionals. When I was in graduate school, one of my professors had been part of in his doctorate program, a research project for a medical school. And the medical school hired them to figure out why medical doctors turn out to be such jerks. That's a cleaned up term for what he was hired to find out. And what they did is they did this basically psychological autopsies on these people. They would go back and look at their life from kindergarten on. these are people who were out practicing medicine as a medical doctor. And they did the research to find out what did people know about them in kindergarten, grade school, high school, and college. And they put all this stuff together. And you know what they found out? These were perfectly healthy people with normal relationships until they got into graduate school. And graduate school, with its torturous routines, was responsible for taking these well-adjusted, healthy people who wanted to help to be a blessing in people's lives and turning them into jerks. The dehumanizing process can only always and forever create results like the process. So if I live my life in a way that's not respectful of myself, if I don't take time for my own physical, mental, and emotional well-being, if I'm not living in healthy, balanced relationships that are constantly working on improving and communicating and becoming more effectively intimate, then it's not possible for me to teach others how to do that. I can talk about it, but that won't be teaching anybody anything because the truth of my behaviors will be communicating far more loudly and effectively than any lecture I give. So that may be more than you wanted, but that's what comes to mind to say.
No, it's absolutely what I needed to hear. So thank you so much for that reminder. And yeah, that is, I understand too that it's, you know, like part of my habitual makeup, I guess, to not tell people no, to just, you know, and that's something that I have worked on and I'm evidently not finished with. Yeah. So thank you. I needed that.
Well, you're most welcome and deserving. It is an occupational hazard for many in the field of the helping professions, and for some of us, it's absolutely part of our inherited, you know, the genetic makeup, the energetic impressions we get from our bloodline, and that when it is so well practiced in the bloodline, it takes a more consistent application of the tools to work through it. But it's still doable. I mean, it's still subject to the same rules of functioning as everything else in our psyche. So,
right.
So you can get better and better at saying, instead of saying no to others, because sometimes that's just such a hard thing to do, especially with our conditioning, learn to say yes to what's good for you.
Oh, what a thought.
Well, it's probably a good mind shifter, right?
All right.
That's probably the root of a really good mind shifter. It's safe and healing for me to do what's in my best interest to build a healthy, loving, effective life.
Hold on, I'm typing. I'm having to do this one-handed because I got the youngin' in my other hand. Okay, so it's safe and healing to do what's in my best interest to...
to build a healthy...
I'm blank.
A healthy, happy, productive life. You might put balanced life and relationships. As with most of these, when I give these to people, I say, feel free to play around with the words until you find one that makes you want to
puke,
scream, or punch the wall, or throw up in your mouth or something. You're going for the stuff that's just going to really catch in your craws, my dad would say.
Right.
I mean, at some level, you've clearly, you know, as one of those people who's developed into a helper and sees herself as a helper, a rescuer, a saver, a good doer. At some level, you downloaded a belief that says you have to sacrifice yourself.
Yes, I did.
And this mind shifter would be about the opposite of that, the opposite truth. You know, there was this thing in the book Course in Miracles Made Easy where Anthony DeMello talks about how the Course says, your journey to the cross should be your last useless journey. There's nothing about Yeshua's message that says you should be suffering, that you have to carry this cross, that there's life is misery. There's nothing in there about that. It's a complete misreading of the stories of that spiritual teacher's life. Suffering just breeds suffering.
It kind of goes along with, the beliefs that myself and I know a lot of people have, that if you're putting yourself first, that you're being selfish and getting to where it's self-caring and it's not something to be guilty about.
Yeah, but Michael likes to use the word instead of selfish, self-wise.
Oh, yeah.
Books like Way of Mastery say we must learn to be very, very divinely selfish. And Michael corrects that and says, no, self-wise. But either way, the recognition is the same wisdom that they have in every airplane when they give you the rules, if we have to make a water landing or if we have the oxygen mask come down, you have to put it on the adult first, because if the adult passes out, the adult can't help the child.
Oh my gosh, I've used that example to so many people.
But if the therapist is not living a healthy life, if the therapist isn't doing more of the right things, if the therapist is trying to pretend that he or she doesn't have strong emotions and never cries or never gets triggered by what is said by someone they're working with. If that's what's happening with the therapist, there is a very limited potential for true healing to happen, because that is the definition of the blind leading the blind. I'm living a completely unhealthy, unbalanced life, and I'm teaching people how to be more loving and more balanced, and it's never going to work because I teach by modeling. Whether I like it or not, that's just the way the system works. Everything that's in me that fights against that and says, oh, no, I should be sacrificing. I should be, kind to everybody no matter what. And, well, you can be kind and at the same time say, I have a previous commitment. Even if that commitment is just to what's healthy for me. I don't have to tell the person who's asking for my time what my commitment is. I don't have to say to them explicitly, look, this isn't good for me because I need 8 hours of sleep. I have to hang up now. I don't have to say that. But that can be the motivation. I want to get my 8 hours sleep. And I say to somebody who's prattling on and refusing to do the work, and I know they're not going to get any real benefit from this, and I say, listen, I got to go. I have a previous commitment. And the commitment can simply be to being healthy in myself, to getting 8 hours of sleep, to taking time to do some still point breathing before I go to bed and cancel my goals. That can be what my commitment is that makes me get off the phone at 8 o'clock so I can get to bed at 9 if I'm an early morning riser. And everything that's in me that wants to scream against that and say, oh, no, this person really needs you, you can't go now, that's my work to do. That's my ego at some level saying that conversations with me are what's healing. And that's the ego talking. The truth of the matter is there's a power far more intense, loving, compassionate, and capable of healing that exists within that person. It's closer to them than their own breath. And there's nothing that I say or do in that phone conversation that runs later than it should for my bedtime that's respectful for me or for them. So that outlines my work.
I'm going to re-listen to this after they pick baby up today because I am sure I've probably missed part of that I really needed to hear. So I will be re-listening. I got a text from someone that said this is good conversation for a lot of people, and but especially talking about those of us who work with other people. So awesome.
Well, I'm glad you're finding it useful. It is just lessons that I've learned over the years that I have to keep reminding myself. And, you know, there's plenty of that going on. I have, in my life right now, my mother's in one of the last phases of her life, so she requires more time. And there have been things that I like to do that I've had to not do as much of because to do them means that I'm going to be running on fumes and staying up later than is good for me or not being able to be there for the commitment to family. And it's really good for me to remember that, you know, life is going to just keep moving on. It's not, my ego is not required to keep the world spinning. Five six three nine 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 three five eight one. If you've got a comment or a question, press 1. Like we've been expanding our list on the call-in numbers since the second hour began, so we're plenty of people there. If you have a comment or a question about this conversation, we'd be glad to hear it. It always makes this
absolutely
richer and deeper.
While we're waiting on someone to press 1, we were looking at the Binghams have a place up north, and we were looking at doing a Laws of Living up there, but it's booked until next year. So perhaps next fall we can schedule to do one at their place. But Michael said, in the meantime, still announced that we may do Laws of Living somewhere in Tennessee or North Carolina. And so if you're interested in doing Laws of Living this fall, please let us know sooner than later so that we can narrow that down. And I know he's wrapping up. They're doing personal codes today, and then they'll do the closure. They'll go over those tonight and then do the closure in the morning, and then he'll be taking people to the airport again tomorrow. And I'll be doing the second hour tomorrow. I figured Friday and Monday was more than enough to put on you doing 2 hours. So I volunteered to do Tuesday and didn't even mention that one to you. But so
press 1. We only have one other person besides us in the chat room, several people on the switchboard. Someone press 1 and ask your question.
Plenty of time. 34 minutes left. How can we support you? What's getting stirred up by this conversation about taking care of yourself and being willing to look at any part of your mind that says you shouldn't take care of yourself first? We talk about so much about the energies that I inherit from the bloodline. And I was spending time with my mother this weekend and listening to stories and getting little, you know, additional insights into my family's bloodline. The whole idea of how just my mother's parents came from such a different time, so much turbulence in the world, that my mother's father had served in the military and then got out and was like 45 years old, and we went back to war and he reenlisted. And he was a successful businessman, and people said, "What? Why are you doing that?" And this was my grandfather's response. He said, "I know I'm too old for combat," but he says, "I've got a son who's going off to war, and I have a tremendous amount of experience with building materials and delivery systems, you know, supply chains, and if anything I do can help shorten this war, I need to go do it." There, because so often when we talk about, you know, this issue, this depression, this problem I have is from my bloodline, and we don't always emphasize so much of the good in us has come down through the bloodline too. "Oh, Dr. Tim, you know, why do you donate so much time to Mind Shifter groups and on the internet show?" And it, you know what? There's a certain way of looking at this that says, I don't really have a choice. It's in the blood. I come from a long line of people that were, you know, they would see something that was a wrong that needed to be righted, and they found that they had some capacity to do that, and they would jump in and do their best to get it to happen. Now, what's mine to do in that is to work to do what we were just talking about, which is establish the balance in my life as I do that, so that I don't just indiscriminately play out that pattern of doing good so that I get drained and burned out to the exclusion of a healthy, balanced life. That's mine to do. That's part of the curriculum. That's part of the recognition that there's a voice within me that can help me decide moment to moment, situation to situation, is this a good thing for me to do? You know, in one of the Darshans, they were talking about, and Q&A from Course in Miracles, I'm sorry, from a Way of Mastery, they talked about the need to just continually go in and ask the still small voice, the comforter, go in and ask, what's mine to do here? And they give the example of the person who, you know, thinks that, oh, I'm a good person, so I need to just, every time I see a homeless person, I need to give them money. And so they're working, they're living their life based on that belief rather than living their life in direct observation and asking to be shown in each moment. So the person gets the nudge to go ahead and give some money to a homeless person, and it works out well. And so the next time they see a homeless person, they give them money. And next time they see a homeless, they give them money. And one time, you know, they just see a homeless person, they run over to give them money, and the person mugs them. And they say, well, how could this happen? Well, it happens because I'm just living my life from a past belief rather than direct observation, rather than asking to be shown in the moment. And if I live my life from that asking to be shown, every time I see a homeless person, I just get quiet and go inside and ask, what's mine to do here? I'll be shown. Sometimes it'll be a smile and nod and say, well, good morning, good afternoon, and move along my way. Sometimes it'll be to go into the sandwich shop nearby, buy them a sandwich, and drop the sandwich for them. Sometimes it'll be to put a little money in their cup or whatever. But it's about asking to be shown, and that's what we have the capacity to do. So I'll take a breath. I see that we have one or two people with hands up. So area code 910, you're in the air. 910, you're in the air.
901.
Okay, this is Brenda from Memphis.
Hello, Brenda from Memphis. How can we support you today?
Well, I just got in on the call about 5 minutes ago, and so what you were saying, I didn't hear everything, but I've been working with this issue recently also, say in about the last six months, about shifting from thinking I have to rescue the world to really looking at how I'm supporting myself and therefore supporting the world. And comes to mind the quote, I am not recalling who it was from, but it's the greatest of treason to do the right thing for the wrong reason. And so that has been surfacing in my mind periodically over the last few months. And as you're saying, asking what is the true motivation behind what I am doing. And so it triggered that memory for me as you were talking about, do I stay on the phone a little extra with somebody who I think needs my wisdom? Or am I using it as an excuse not to support myself and keeping myself in the position I need? The other thing that it triggered was a thought that came from somewhere, and I don't remember who it was, is with the issue of helping somebody on the street or giving to somebody. And for years, I gave out of anger, a resentment. I gave, compelled to give, and that may have come out of my missionary parents' background, as you were talking about your family background. But I was always very angry about it afterwards. And so
Brenda,
yes.
Your voice is getting a little soft and fading in and out.
Okay, how's this?
Okay, that's a little better. So I'm going to ask you to clarify when you say you've been giving out of anger. I don't understand that reference.
Well, I would give, but I would feel very angry and resentful that I was having to give. So the motivation for giving was not out of space of love. It was out of a space, I would say, of addiction or of the idea that it's better to give than to receive, or that somebody else deserves, if I'm better off than someone else, that they deserve what I have. And that has been a challenge for me for a lot of years, and that I've done a lot of wake-up sheets on that issue of giving only when I'm in a space of love and in the right space. So that's what I meant by it would be triggering. And I guess my goal would have been that I needed to feel anger. And so this was it was like I was being generous, but yet I was resenting anybody who walked up to the street, up on the street with me asking me for money. So
that was something that I had to deal with. And I was maybe being generous, which we seem to think is a positive mode, but my reasoning for doing it was not from a space of love. So that then goes into, are we looking at people and saying, well, this person is not capable of taking care of themselves, so they need me to take care of them. So the question that came up for me, or that I heard from another person, is are we crippling someone by doing something that we think is good for the wrong reason? Anyway, that's my comment.
Okay, well, I don't know about the idea that we're crippling someone. I mean, we have these very different attributions of power, and we tend to think we're far more powerful than we actually are. My ego wants to think that what I do is so important, and
right.
Really, it's just this flow of life. And I'm just an active participant in that flow of life. And so,
right.
You know, what I do can have ripple effects, and yet it's just a ripple. It's not the ocean.
Right.
The other thing that comes to mind is this quote, one of my favorite quotes from the book, The Mirror Theory, where it says, "No loving gift is ever truly given if the giver is not respected in the process."
If the giver is not respected. So by doing it from a space of a non-loving
resentment.
Space,
yeah, resentment, anger, bitterness. Yeah, whatever you do carries that energy.
Right. So that my not respecting myself does not respect the other person also.
Correct.
I think. And so when I was saying about, I know that if we enable someone through something we're doing, then I think that we then maybe create a position in which we're not trusting that they have the ability to take care of themselves or to solve their own issues. We think that they need us to solve it for them.
Yeah,
so
but I think, you know, there's a lot of just mind games in that.
Okay.
So what this kind of work is calling me to do is live in this direct observation and do what we were talking about on the 4th of July and what I was recapping quite a bit of today, which is learn to live by direct observation and learn to ask to be shown.
Yes.
Stop the reliance on I'm going to figure this out and here's my conscious logical mind deciding that I'm the rescuer, or if I put myself in the role of rescuer, I'm hurting someone. Could just put all that aside and live more in the moment and learn to tune into the still small voice, the comforter, whatever you want to call it, Ruka Dukucha, the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, but learn to tune into that more and more day after day. And in the process, I live from this direct observation. Oh, I'm getting this intuitive hit that it would be a lovely thing to give this person some money. Oh, I'm getting an intuitive hit that it's this person is full of bitterness and anger, and so what they need more than money is just I'll send them a blessing through the Pierre Pratervan type work.
Right.
If I'm living in that space, I don't need to keep asking, uh-oh, am I doing it right or wrong? If I just trust the process and ask to be shown, then whatever I'm prompted to do, I just want to trust that process.
I'm in complete agreement with that. One of the ways that I have been able to move more in that direction from the old habit patterns is if I'm not feeling or getting a direct message or feeling a space of love for the interaction, I will just say, not today, and leave it up to when that feeling does come, that this is the right time. And so for me, it was very, very difficult to say no. And transitioning to not today gave me some more time to actually listen to the inner voice rather than listening to the addictive voice. And that, so I'm in complete agreement with you on that.
Well, and the other thing you might find useful is what we're talking about with Jeannie is, you know, there's a whole different energy and a whole different feeling when I'm thinking I'm saying no to this or that or the other thing versus I'm saying yes to what's best for me.
Correct. Yeah, I agree with that. And that's hard sometimes when...
Let's say it this way. That may go against my established thought patterns.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's hard. It's just different.
I'm really putting
other people's needs first or putting my needs or what's best for me second or third priority.
Yes, that's a better way of saying it. Definitely.
Well, that helps me program my mind a little bit more accurately. If I say, oh, but that's hard, I'm programming my mind to believe this is really hard.
As we know
with this regulatory speech gift that we've been given, there's a part of our mind that actually listens to what we say and think. And it is a powerful programming force. And once I wake up to that, I can decide, you know what? I'm going to program myself to be aware of the ease that's available that so many of these spiritual traditions talk about with grace and with asking to be shown. And I'm going to start experiencing it and then speaking to it with my thoughts.
Well, in your trick, I have found that once I make the goal and the choice to do that, then it does become, I realize it's much easier than I had anticipated that it would be. And I feel better about myself and everybody involved.
I would encourage you to just keep that practice up and recognize that if I catch myself saying that's hard, that's my ego trying to keep me limited.
Yes. That is.
Been given this free will, and I can exercise that power of will. And I've been given the gift of awareness of the regulatory speech and the power of my thinking a certain way, programming my thoughts and beliefs. So I can step into that use. I can choose to use my own willpower to monitor my thoughts and my statements and program myself to the actuality that, you know what, this is just a very well-practiced pattern of thought. And I can choose anew, as Course in Miracles keeps asking us to choose again. You don't like how you're feeling in the middle of the day? You don't like the response you've chosen or the interpretation you're putting on the day's events? We're invited to step back and choose again. To ask to be shown. Is there a different interpretation I can put on these events that's going to leave me feeling more loving and connected.
I'm in agreement with that.
So just to recap, when people start talking about, you know, if I give this person money that I'm contributing to, you know, I'm trapping them or I'm hurting them, I don't find much utility in that in my life. I find much greater utility in recognizing, I don't know if it's going to help them or hurt them. What I have control over is not whether this helps them or hurts them, or what they do if I give them $5, if they run off to the crack dealer or the wine store. I don't have any control over that. What I have control over is what's the energy in my heart space when I make that choice. Do I stop and ask to be shown, or do I just do an automatic, this is what I'm supposed to do, this is what I did last time, this is what my bloodline does? I have the option to learn to live more in the moment from direct observation and ask to be shown. I have the option to recognize that my conscious logical mind is so limited that it has no concept, no way to conceive of all the different levels of things that are going on right now and how they're interacting. And I can ask for guidance, and I can learn to tune into that guidance and feel it at a different level than I ever have before, and let that guidance drive my day and my choices and my behaviors in the day. So that's how I would respond to that.
Okay, that sounds good. And I will continue to work with that.
Well, I appreciate the call, and I think it ties in nicely with what we do in every worksheet, because in every worksheet we cancel our goal and we ask to be shown. And we're trying to strengthen that spiritual capacity to listen to a higher voice and to be guided by the actuality of the moment acting on us. So, thank you for the call. Is there anything else we can do to support you today?
I think that is it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You've given me some things to think about.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for the call. We appreciate the call. Thanks, Brenda. So 563-999-3581, 10 minutes left, or 9 and a half, depending upon how. Thank everybody for their loving energy, and I really have had a lot of use lately of the Pierre Pratervand process of blessing, which is generating this heartfelt energy, sincere heartfelt energy of sending good thoughts, positive energy towards somebody, and looking for the way to see them in their highest and best. To my mind, it's kind of an amplification of the ancient definition, the Aramaic definition for humility, the idea that I can look for and see the highest and best in another, and then even if rage is coming out of them, even if desperation and despair is coming out of them, I can see their highest and best potential and then choose to cooperate only with that highest and best. And my mind, my eye says that Pierre Pratervan's book about the gentle art of blessing just takes that and makes it a little bit more specific and takes it into a practice, a daily practice, to see the highest and best in someone who's struggling or has a health issue or is in a, what Michael Rice would call a healing crisis, or is symptomatic, and choose an image in my mind's eye of all of the opposite of the negativity that they're displaying in their life. So if I have somebody who's you know, explaining or demonstrating road rage. I can bless them in their patience. I can see them calmly arriving safely at their destination. And I can pour my heartfelt mind energy into that image, into that felt sense of their safety and the health and safety of everyone around. And I encourage us to do that for Patrick, for Michelle, for Susan Bingham and the person she's working with right now, and anybody on the show who's facing some kind of difficulty. And just understand that your mind energy is a creative force. You don't have any choice about that. It's always on and it's always creating. What we do have the choice in this work is when we become aware of, I get to choose where I'm pointing it. I get to choose where I direct that creative force. Do I point it in the direction of loving thoughts and healing thoughts and prosperous thoughts and peaceful, calm, respectful resolution to arguments kinds of thoughts? Or do I just automatically react the way my culture has taught me and pour attack thoughts or defensive thoughts or hurt thoughts into that energy field between me and this other person? So that's taken us right to the end of the hour. Jeannie, I hope you have the outro button ready. Thank you so much for joining us for our second hour here today, and good luck with the show tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.